All right, thank you for that, and welcome back to the show. It is Tuesday at 9:40, and we have in studio, you can see her on twitch.tv right now, Karen Lyle with salesport.com, or I should just say Salesport Talk, right?
Yeah, we can say Salesport Talk. It has a home here on Sports Byline. So.
Yes. Tell us about our guest.
Well, today I thought we would focus on sailing would be the halftime, which is the music, because we use music in our show, and also every race that I know of has music in the yacht club after, or when everybody's hanging out and having a good time. So we have Rob Dellinger of the Alpha Rhythm Kings, and he just finished recording a track on the 2 weeks inside Studio D that was recorded in Fantasy Studios last September, just right after it closed.
Hi, Karen.
Hey, you're there, Rob. Good to talk to you. So I'm introducing you to my friend Rick here. So,
hello, Rick.
Hey, how are you? So you've performed in movies and live shows on tall ships and yacht clubs. Tell us more how the sport and the music go hand in hand.
Well, this is so interesting. As Karen mentioned, it is sort of like a halftime, although from the artist's perspective, you know, when I watch a football game, you know, halftime is kind of the main event, being an artist, I must admit. But we love playing at yacht clubs, and I have my band's called the Alpha Rhythm Kings. And, you know, it's a different experience than playing at, say, a jazz club or another type of private event because, you know, people are, they're out doing what they love, and then they get a break from doing what they already love doing, and we're there to entertain them. So it really is a really joyful type of experience to play for people after they've finished up sailing or maybe at one of their special events, things like that.
Now, is it too simplistic to say that it's yacht rock?
You know, that's funny. My wife and I were talking about yacht rock and how it's a genre now, but it's sort of rebranding of light rock. But what I do is more vintage music, and I do swing and jump blues and boogie-woogie and jazz, and I sing and I play the trumpet. And I think that what we're doing is finding a home with people that enjoy yacht clubs and other types of private clubs because it is different than the yacht rock.
Well, and also people dance when you're playing the music oftentimes, and they're involved in that. And as a musician, how is that? What's the difference between when people are listening to you or when they're dancing to your music?
Yeah, it's so funny. I've been playing for dancers primarily, or largely, for the last, 10, 12, 15 years. And when I first started doing it, it felt like people, it was a totally different energy. It felt like I wished that people were sitting and listening instead of dancing, because as a musician, sometimes you will interpret that as they're not paying attention. As I started doing it over the years, I really got addicted to the energy of the people in the room moving around, dancing, and realized how much they were, in fact, listening, watching them choreograph their moves to little hits you do. And then a lot of times they stop and cheer if you're really rocking it. And I did realize after all these years now, I really crave that energy in the room of playing for dancers. I do also love an audience, a studio audience or a club audience as well. But the energy from the dancers, I really got used to that now. And so it's a totally different thing, but it's really exhilarating.
Well, I'm holding it up to the cameras here, 2 weeks inside Studio D, volume one that I know you did last year.
You'll hear in the track that you're about to play that influence. It's a little bit different than the typical, say, Glenn Miller type swing music. It's got a little bit more of an edge. It's really pre-rock and roll. And so there's artists like Roy Milton, Louis Jordan, Louis Prima, and of course I love Louis Armstrong and a lot of the other great trumpet players as well.
All right, that's Rob Dellinger, and online people want to find you, more about you. Where would they go, Rob?
Yeah, so we're called the Alpha Rhythm Kings, like Alpha Rhythm, and we have alpharhythmkings.com, and our Facebook is really active, at Alpha Rhythm Kings.
There he is, Rob Dellinger. Thank you so much, and we're going to get our next guest on here. And
a little bit of Rob.
All right, let's listen to a song.
Just for you to ride, but things are changing, baby. Believe me when I say that fools are getting scared.
All right, so Karen, how is Kai Hurst doing? I know that he got injured in the Sail GP Australia race.
Well, he broke a few ribs, and that was it was a crash, but it wasn't a crash with another boat. It was Team Australia just crashed into the water when it's up on those foils. When it comes down, it just hit really hard right as they were coming across the finish line in the race number five. And the medics came out and had to attend to everyone. Someone had a little blood, and Kai had the broken ribs, and they wrapped him up and sent him back out, and that's when Team Australia won the match race right after, the final match race. So he had the broken ribs during that time. But the news is that he's in Tahoe last, recovering and doing well, and I imagine he's going to probably be back for the Sail GP race in June 20th to 22nd over in New York.
You almost think that, I know they wear helmets, they might want to wear those, like what quarterbacks wear, those like rib pads almost.
Well, I might suggest it.
Or a flak jacket. All right, we're now joined by Jeff Abel, a tactician aboard Westerly, which is a Santa Cruz 70-foot monohull. And Jeff, do you have a preference one way or the other, a dual hull, monohull, catamaran, any of that stuff?
Depends how much wind there is, I suppose.
That's right. And well, you have a 70-foot monohull, so does it respond as well to, if you're pointing upwind as a shorter monohull?
I mean, against a shorter monohull, it's probably won't go as close to the wind as something a little bit more. Yeah, smaller and efficient, but it definitely goes a lot faster. So you get to where you need to go a lot faster. With a multi-hull, they tend to sail even a little bit farther away from the wind and just that much faster. So yeah, kind of depends on how much wind.
I know coming up this weekend, the Swift Shore International Yacht Race, Vancouver and back. How does that work? Do you come all the way in? Do you have to like cross into the city lines? Is there a buoy that you go around, and where do you originate from?
Well, it starts off Victoria on Vancouver Island.
Okay,
and so it starts right at the waterfront off the city, so you get everyone can stand out and watch, and then we race out west towards the Pacific Ocean. So there's a number of marks that you can sail around depending on the length of course. The one we're sailing around this weekend is right at Cape Flattery. It's right at the end of the Olympic Peninsula on Washington State. So we're pretty much the Pacific Ocean before we turn around and come back.
What is the etiquette for racing? Is there such a thing as, like race car driving, you're getting too close? Or is it kind of like the Wild West out there?
Well, it can be. There are definitely rules that you have to stick to and abide by. And there's a whole process for determining who's right and who's wrong if those rules are broken. But for the most part, people tend to stick to those rules and self-police the sport, as it were. So it's generally pretty clean. But that's not to say I haven't been in a number of those situations over my time.
Well, one captain can put up a penalty flag, right? If something is done that the race committee has to pay attention to. Now, how does that work with an ocean race? Because there's a lot of distance involved. And is the committee boat following you that whole time, or how does that work?
No, and that's kind of where that self-policing comes in. Say there's a disagreement somewhere out in the middle of the Strait of Juan de Fuca where we're sailing, and it's 3 in the morning. There'll be a lot of yelling. And if one of the boats determines that they broke that rule, they can take what's called a penalty turn or a time penalty, which comes out in the end or once the boats have finished. Or they can wait till we get back to shore. And then there's something called a protest hearing, and there's judges and all this other stuff that we, sit down and find facts and try to determine who's wrong. And it is quite important because if two boats hit and there's damage, then that actually determines who's got to pay up.
Right. Insurance and all of those issues. I have a question for you. You were on an Olympic track with the Lasers for many years. I guess you started at 9 years old. Is that right? So what's the difference now between racing in a 70-foot monohull versus the Laser where you've got I guess, 14 crew or something like that. Why are you doing this now in comparison to what you were on track for with the Olympics before?
Well, there's a lot more people to talk to now, that's for sure. It's I wouldn't say it's easier, but it's more accessible now. I don't have to pay the bills. Joy and Stuart Dahlgren, who own the boat, are very generous that way. They pay most of the money for us to come out and sail with them. It's more accessible. It's more fun, I would say. The competition is a lot less. Certainly the stakes are a little bit higher when you're trying to get onto, you know, your national team or on the Olympic track. So it's definitely a little bit easier on the competition side. Everyone's a little bit more friendly, I suppose.
Yeah. Just one last question for you. When I look at a Santa Cruz, it doesn't look like it was made for people to walk around or lay on top of. And so I think about the crew and how many times you see them like sitting on one side to get the weight one way or the other. It's just, it's hard to get your footing wherever you are on that thing, unless you're at the helm, right?
It can be. It's definitely a little bit of a dance sometimes trying to find your way around the boat. But for the most part, it's, you know, when you're doing any kind of maneuver, the crew they know where they need to go. They know where not to be. You know, you wouldn't want to be in the way of the boom. That would hurt you pretty badly. So it's, everyone has a pretty good idea of where they need to be walking and wandering around on the boat. But when you're just sailing in a straight line, everyone's just kind of sitting on the rail on one side. So it's not a ton of movement. And then whoever's the helmsperson or the tactician are kind of doing a little bit more walking around on the boat. So.
All right, Jeff Abel, best of luck in the Swift Shore, and hopefully we'll catch up down the road.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
All right, and Karen Lyle, any last thoughts as we say goodbye?
All right, Jeff,
well,
that was
we'll see
great.
You next
Thank
Tuesday
you.
At 9:37, and we have some great guests every week, as you know.
Sail, sport, talk. There she is, Karen Lyle. Thank you so much for coming in. Thanks to our guests, Rob Dellinger and Jeff Abel. I'm Rick Tittle. We'll come on back.